Thanks for having me back. I really enjoyed being here with you guys last time and have been super excited to share again this time, especially some stuff that is very intimate, is very much an intimate part of my life and my faith and my walk with Jesus. And one of my top strengths is I'm an includer, so I love bringing people into the things that like energize me and get me excited, as well as it's some of the things that slow me down and quiet my soul a bit too. So anyway, all that to say, thank you so much. So this is going to be kind of a two-part series. And so this week will very much be kind of a context and laying the framework and foundation for what we're going to talk about next week. This week, we're going to talk about the church calendar a little bit and why it might possibly be important and valuable to our lives and to our faith. And then next week, we're going to talk specifically about the season we call Lent, which is a season that that we celebrate or that we experience before Easter that prepares us for the resurrection, okay? And so, again, just like Chad said, if this is all new to you, I just want to encourage you to soak up what you can, to consider the possibility that that there might be some wisdom here, to wrestle and struggle with it. Feel free to like even push back a little. Because what I, just like Chad said, it's funny because my introduction matches like his introduction pretty close. Just like Chad said, this can be something that we either A, haven't experienced very much because of our church background, B, we haven't experienced very much because we have no church background, or C, some of us have experienced it in harmful ways, in damaging ways, in ways that have been, instead of life-giving, that have taken away from our souls. And so I just want to be sensitive to those concerns and those stories, and I just want to invite you into a space where you might hold those concerns out loosely and allow yourself the opportunity to kind of reevaluate maybe the way you think about these things and interact with them. I would even say this: we have a small enough community here. Let's even break the rules a little bit, shall we? I love breaking the rules, and anybody who's out there that knows me knows I have a tendency to break the rules a bit. So if you have a question, you're even welcome to raise your hand if you want. I know you're not supposed to do that in church. I'm supposed to just talk at you for half an hour, but if you even have a question, I'm going to invite you. Raise your hand, and let's wrestle with it a little bit, all right? Chad certainly can't stop us, am I right? I think he's watching. Oh, I love it. I love it. So let's start here. There was a let's start with this first slide. As your time goes, so goes your life. Anybody know who said that? Anybody know who said that quote? As your time goes, so goes your life. I'll tell you what, if you can guess it, New Life will buy you lunch. No? Your pastor, several weeks ago, I was sitting here, and he was talking about the way we order our weeks and our days, and he made this comment, and I just went, oh, that's it. That's so good. Chad Pickering, perhaps Andy Stanley by way of Chad Pickering, am I right, said, as your time goes, so goes your life. And I think there's just so much wisdom about this. And again, since this is like familiar space for you guys, because you just heard this a few weeks ago, I thought that this would be a great place to start. He was, again, talking about the way we order our days and reminding us that Jesus gives us permission to say no to some things. He gives us space to rest and the opportunity to experience holy leisure a little bit. I want to begin here because it doesn't just apply to our days and our weeks. It might also apply to our years and our decades. And it doesn't just address the quantity of activities we put on our calendars, what we say yes to and what we don't, what we spend our time doing and what we don't. It also addresses the quality of activities that we put on our calendars. So as your time goes, so goes your life. I'm going to ask these guys to throw up this picture a little bit. Have you guys ever had one of those experiences that challenge your understanding of time? that like put you in a space that you were like, wait a second, something's different here. So at the about middle last summer, I decided to spend a little bit of time at a monastery out in New Mexico. It's Christ Monastery in the desert, and this was it. This beautiful place in the middle of nowhere. It's full of monks just hanging out, monkeying around. I know, that's a really bad joke. Hey, that was almost as bad as Superb Owl Sunday. Okay, anyway. So I'm out here at this monastery. And I'm out here at this monastery, and I'm having a conversation with one of the monks. And I just spent a couple weeks out there just trying to collect my thoughts and giving my soul time to rest and kind of debriefing from the crazy year that was out there. And I was having a conversation with one of the monks, and he said something that jarred me a little bit. And it just jarred me because it was so foreign to me. So he said this. He was telling me about what it takes to like become a monk and like what the process is for becoming a monk. Somebody who like in the Catholic Church, this is a Catholic Benedictine monastery, who basically lives their life out in the desert, has surrendered their life to a life of prayer and to a life of service. And I was fascinated by this because I'm just like, how do you get from point A, living in this crazy world that we live in, to point B, where you live out in the middle of nowhere with a bunch of other dudes, seven times a day, sometimes eight times a day, coming together for prayer and fasting often and living in deep solitude? And he was telling me about this, and I said, well, what if the process is too hard? Or what if somebody gets here and they start down it and they just decide, you know, it's not really for them? And he said, oh, that happens quite a bit. We often get people like that. And basically, they'll take a few years. They'll give them just a few years of a break, and they get to leave. And they get a couple years just to discern if this is the calling that Jesus has placed on their life and if this is the way they want their life to go. And I said, oh, okay, so they have a couple years to discern this, a little bit of time. That's what he said. They get a little bit of time to do this. I was like, so what's a little bit of time? And he was like, oh, about 9 or 10 years. And I was like, wait a second. Our definition of a little bit of time is very different. And I noticed it about that, because when you say a little bit of time, I'm like, maybe it's a year, probably like 6 months, maybe like the as fast-paced as we're used to living, like you get 2 weeks, you need to figure this out, and then you need to commit or get off the bus, right? But he said a little bit of time, and he was referring to 9 or 10 years, and it just stopped me because I realized then at that moment that we had a different sense of time. And as I stayed there throughout the next couple weeks, what I realized is, so their prayer life is ordered by the Psalms. They pray the Psalms, the entire book of the Psalms. They pray that every week. Every week. And they pray it through singing. And then after they sing every song, after they sing every song, they say, glory to the Father and to the Son and to the Holy Spirit, a world without end. Amen. And I realized that every week, with every psalm in the Bible, they're saying a world without end. And I realized just how much this was forming and shaping them. Because when 9 or 10 years becomes just a little bit of time, you start to realize that they really do have an experience of time, an existence of time that is eternal. They really do operate in a world without end. And you could tell because of the way they talk about time. So here's the deal. It's not just monks, though. Our culture is fascinated by time. Super fascinated by time, and I'll prove it to you. Doctor Strange. Anybody seen this movie? Such a good movie, right? It's so good. It's so good. The graphics, the special effects are super cool. Anybody know what the movie is about? If I had to name this movie, I would say Doctor Strange and the Hands of Time. So 4 minutes into the movie, what we see kind of introduces us to this idea of time that comes up through in and throughout the movie. As Dr. Strange opens this case, this beautiful case, and of course he's a surgeon, so it's all decked out and awesome, and he pulls out this case, and out comes these shiny spinning watches, and he's got like 80 of them, and I'm like, holy cow, this is crazy. And it's just kind of this introduction that time is a theme that's woven throughout the entire movie. And ultimately, he saves the world by realizing that time offers both freedom and slavery. Right? Think about it. End of the movie. That's a little bit of a spoiler alert, by the way. Sorry. I think you're supposed to say that beforehand. But or this next one. Have you guys seen the movie Arrival? It's about, spoiler alert, right? It's about a linguistic professor who is tasked with interpreting the language of alien visitors. And she discovers that the language they speak is time. And they write it out, ultimately, they don't write like this. Like, they write it in these globs of ink that are, like, linear, circle, and they, like, put it out there all at once, and they have to discover, like, their language, like, their time. Their language is ultimately time. And then a couple others. I mean, A Wrinkle in Time is about to come out, which if you haven't read the book, this one's going to come out in just a few weeks. And no spoilers here, but you kind of get an idea of A Wrinkle in Time. They do this like this wormhole kind of idea, which is the same idea as Interstellar as well, which I don't understand this movie. I don't get it. But what I do know is that after I watched it, my sense of time was like I experienced this disorientation, and I was like, wait a second. He went from there to there. She aged. He didn't. Something to do with like quantum physics and a wormhole. I don't know. But again, I think it proves my point that our culture is fascinated with time, and it's not even just movies. Some of you guys who are Rolling Stones fans, claimed in 1964 that time was on their side. And then it's funny because in 1966, they would turn around and sing, "You're out of time," right? And then in 1969, Chicago asked, "Does anybody know what time it is? And does anybody even care?" And then in 1981, Styx came out, and this is a great song. They had too much time on their hands, right? I mean, what is that like? I don't even know. And my favorite one out of this list is the Pink Floyd song. And the lyrics go like this. "Tired of lying in the sunshine, staying home to watch the rain. You are young and life is long, and there is time to kill today. And then the one day you find 10 years have gotten behind you. No one told you when to run. You missed the starting gun." Right? Just like it's Pink Floyd's expiration of time, which you could just, I'll let your minds go. And some of you guys are like, yeah, I remember that. Yeah. Whereas I'm like looking back on it, you know. There's this direct link between culture and the way we understand and interact with our time. Like the two are very much together. Culture and time go hand in hand. And we might say that we are cultured into our understanding of time. And this is one of the bigger points. We are cultured into our understanding of time. I heard about a research article that came out just a few months ago. And it essentially, the research article looked at kids in the United States and kids in Israel. And here's what they came up with. Ready for this? Up until the age of 6 or 7, kids think their birthday is what ages them. Their birthday party is what ages them. So whatever we're doing as part of our culture, right, celebrating these birthday parties, getting all excited with the cake and the candles and all of that stuff, kids are actually, up until the age of like 6 or 7, they actually think it's the party itself that pushes them forward, that allows them to advance forward in life and allows them to age. Isn't that nuts? Like, think about that. How about that for a cruel joke? If you don't clean up your room, you will not turn 7. They actually think it's their birthday party that moves them forward in life. And why? It's because our culture is tied to our time. And the way we experience these two things together go hand in hand. But think about it. Part of what it means to be, name a culture, any culture, means to follow their understanding of time. Part of what it means to be Chinese is to follow the Chinese calendar and their understanding of time, right? Or Cherokee, right? The Native Americans is to follow their way of time, their understanding of time. And calendars are the tools by which our cultures follow time, right? Our calendars are. So there's this link between time and culture, and then time. Calendars are the time, essentially the tools that we use to measure our time. I think it's interesting we're talking about this on Super Bowl Sunday, right? Think about it. What is not on our calendar? Super Bowl Sunday. Like, what calendar is that on when you have one printed off, right? With the cute little puppies or the goats and trees or whatever, right? Super Bowl Sunday is not in there, but what is also on our calendar every year? Super Bowl Sunday, right? It's very much what it means to be an American. Even the people, those of us who do not celebrate football or experience it or, like, have any idea who was playing up until somebody said it this morning up on stage. Like, even we know that it's Super Bowl Sunday and we'll partake in the celebration of cheese dip and nachos and small hot dog weenies and watching football this afternoon, right? Because, again, culture, time, together, it's very much a part of it. So our calendars, next big point, our calendars are tied to our citizenship. Our calendars are tied to our citizenship. It's as if they say, if our calendars tell us you are an American, this is what you do, and then you do those things, right? Or if you're Chinese, like, this is what it means to be an American, and then on your calendar you have all the, like, Chinese things, right, that you celebrate. Our calendars form and shape us by providing space to, they do two things, commemorate our heroes, think about this, President's Day, Martin Luther King Day, Memorial Day, Veterans Day. Our calendars give us holidays to commemorate our heroes and to celebrate our stories, right? 4th of July, Thanksgiving. Right? Our calendars do all this and are intricately woven into part of our culture. And so the American calendar, part of what it means to be American is to follow the American calendar, right? And you can say that for any culture. If we were Chinese, we would use the Chinese Cherokee. If we were Mayan, you know, we would all be dead because it ended last year at September 23rd. Just kidding. That was a low blow. I'm sorry if there's any Mayans out there watching. I'm sorry. So we start to get this. It's American, it's Chinese, it's Cherokee. It's Jewish too, though. Just like Chad had said in the intro video, and just like he brought up a few weeks ago, if we pull up Leviticus 23, and I think they have the scripture up there. So again, this is the part of the Bible that is given to the Jewish people. And God is laying out the laws by which they're to live by, right? And the Lord said to Moses, speak to the Israelites and say to them, these are my appointed festivals, right? My holidays, my feasts. These are the things you are to celebrate. The appointed festivals of the Lord, which you are to proclaim as sacred assemblies. There are 6 days when you may work, but the seventh day is the day of Sabbath rest. A day of sacred assembly. You are not to do any work wherever you live. It is the Sabbath to the Lord. These are the Lord's appointed festivals, the sacred assemblies you are to proclaim at their appointed times. And then he goes on, if you continue reading Leviticus 23, he lists a whole bunch of their festivals, the things that they celebrate here, which is like Passover. Right? Was the celebration of rescue and deliverance for the Jews and salvation. It's like the biggest celebration on the Jewish calendar because it's when they remember the time when God rescued them from the hands of Pharaoh and their people. Like, he saved them, right? So he puts that on their calendar. The Feast of Unleavened Bread. If you read into this a little bit, you start to find that leaven was like this synonymous with sin and evil, and the Feast of Unleavened Bread was like this acknowledgement of sin and evil, of ridding themselves of it. It was like a feast of holiness, so to speak, right? And if you go on, all these like holidays have so much significance and symbolization in them, but again, it was part of what it meant to be Jewish, what it meant to be one of the people of God, meant that you would follow the calendar that God set forth for them. And so here's my next question. Why did God create a calendar of holidays for his people to live by? Why? What was so special and important about holidays and calendars and all of this that God would include it in his big list of laws? Was it simply to keep the people in line? Was it simply to just like keep them like coloring in the lines? Was it to keep them on track and make sure they didn't sin often? Was it some sort of karma system, like laid out to appease him enough so that he would bless them, take care of them, enrich their crops, and give them all they need? Or was there something more happening here? When Chad talked about the Ten Commandments a few weeks ago, he told us that God had given the law because he was forming and shaping a people. And so what if providing a calendar was part of that forming and shaping that he was giving them? What if it didn't have to do with like them appeasing him, or it didn't have to do with keeping them in the lines? What if it had more to do with him trying to create a people that turned to him often, that knew how to follow him and worship him? What if following our calendars isn't just something we do, but what if our calendars are something that does something to us? And if there's one point to get out of this whole sermon, like that's it right there, is to consider this idea that our calendars aren't just something we do. They're something that does something to us. They form and they shape us from the inside out. They make us into Americans. They turn us Jewish, right? They create in us ways to be Chinese. Or for us as Christians, they allow us a story to hold on to go along with, and to become Christian. Our calendars story us into our citizenship. And that's true for any culture. Not just Christians, not just Jewish, any culture. Our calendars story us into our citizenship. So maybe we could even play with Chad's words a little bit, right? Which again, he can't stop us. So here's what I would say. As your calendars go, so goes your life. As your calendars go, so goes your life. And so this was the wisdom of the church fathers as they began to formulate the church calendar and what is called sometimes the liturgical year. That's like the churchy word for it. That's what was going on inside the church fathers' heads. And so I'm going to ask them to throw this. This is an image, essentially, of the church calendar laid out up here. And you can see, for those of you who can see this and read, this is essentially the whole church calendar put together in one graphic. All the seasons labeled. You'll notice with the church calendar, there's colors. Again, just because we're people and we're meaning machines, we pack meaning into everything. So even the colors here represent something, like symbolize something. And so our church calendar as Christians begins in Advent, which is back in November, right? And that prepares us for Jesus' coming. It's Advent is the season of waiting and anticipation, entering into the longings of those who suffer and those who are in need of hope. It's the time in our Christian walk where we get to identify those who are on the margins of society, who need and long for hope. And we wait with them in the gutters, in the trenches, knowing that Christmas is coming. And so Advent is the season of waiting. Christmas is then 12 days, again, because Christians do it right. It's not just one day and we hand out the presents and we're done. But Christmas, we celebrate 12 days, celebrating that Jesus proclaims that being human is very good through the incarnation and becoming human himself. And so we have Advent and we have Christmas. We have the season that we're in right now called Epiphany, where we celebrate the gathering of the Magi and the birth of Christ in there. We celebrate Christ's baptism during this season. We celebrate his miracles, that specifically the miracle that kicks them all off, where he was at the wedding party and he turns the water into wine. This is the season of Epiphany that we find ourselves. It's very much tied to the book of Revelation, and it points us to Lent. And again, Lent is this season of wandering in the desert. And I'm not going to get too much into that, but it's this 40 days of wandering in the desert that that where we follow Jesus throughout his life to the cross, but ultimately to the resurrection and ultimately to hope. And it's the hope that we find in Easter, which again, isn't just one Sunday morning that we celebrate and then we have dinner with our families. Again, Easter is a season, and it's the season of resurrection. And it's full of hope, and it's full of joy. But again, the wisdom of the church fathers says we have to prepare for that. And so we need a season like Lent. Again, I'm getting ahead of myself a little too much here. And then, of course, Pentecost, the season where we celebrate not just the coming of the Holy Spirit, but we celebrate us as the church, like reaching out into the corners of the world and going out. And again, these aren't just celebrations that we do in our homes and in our churches, and we just say, it's Pentecost, let's go. Again, because we know our calendars form and shape us, what we realize is like during these seasons, we shift our attention and our focus to these things that are big parts of our faith. And what we find up here is that it's all in balance. Like we don't have to crazily week after week run around every week focusing on the cross, because we know it has a season where we focus on the cross and we're like deeply committed to understanding what the cross means. But we also know there's people out there that matter immensely, and there's a season where we turn our attention specifically to them. And we realize we just can't do it all together all at once, so it has to be laid out. And again, like the colors, there's so much meaning, which I'm not going to break all this down today, but there's so much meaning in the colors and the changing of the seasons. Again, this calendar, like every other calendar, is also very much tied to the rhythms of the earth and astrology and the movement of the planets. And again, there's wisdom packed into this and brought together. So some of the reasons, other reasons why I appreciate the church calendar, it took many years to create. It wasn't just one guy going, hey, this looks good, let's do it. It took many hands to create. Again, years and years and years. It took an entire church to go, hey, this is how we want to order and structure our years. It's something that unites many corners of the church. And again, this is a really important point because, again, I've seen this become so divisive. And like, so you have to do this or else. But when we step back for a moment, we realize, holy cow, it's not just the Catholic Church that celebrates the calendar or that uses the calendar to allow itself to be formed. The Catholic Church, but our Orthodox brothers and sisters use it as well. Presbyterian, Episcopal, Anglican, Methodist, Lutheran. Even the Village Church in Texas has started using the church calendar, which I know Matt Chandler is kind of like the Pope of evangelicalism, you know? So if he does it, we should definitely do it. But you see, it's one of those things that can bring us all together, and together we get to celebrate not just this day of Christmas and this day of Easter, but we get to all kind of head in a similar direction. And again, it can be something that's deeply inclusive that brings us, like bonds us with the bigger church. So we're not just this little boat floating along on our own direction, but that we get to be a part of a fleet. Jesus's fleet, you know, like the big church. But ultimately, and I'm going to start to close with this. Ultimately, though, the church calendar allows me to live into my Christian story as I am formed and shaped by it. And that's the invitation that it gives to all of us, is that it allows us to live in to the full story of Christ. And there's order and structure to it as well. It's a calendar that's not created for tribes or by the boundaries and the banners of nations. It doesn't celebrate the death of nations over other nations or the events that prove triumphant superiority to others. Simply put, it's a calendar of hope. And just in the same way birthdays and anniversaries keep us tethered to one another, keeps us tethered to the people that matter most to us, so too does the church calendar keep us tethered to Jesus. Because it continues, like, again, it's so weird because this was just a thing I did for a little bit, and slowly what's happened is it's become, like, more center stage on my, like, the way I like live my life throughout the year than even like the American calendar does as well. So again, it's for me, it's just happened to become Advent before it's Black Friday. You know, like you know what I mean? Like there's competing calendars happening there, and now I think in terms more of Advent than like I said, Black Friday. But again, when I see this, when I experience it, when our communities celebrate and rejoice these things, we're celebrating Jesus, our connectedness to him, the fact that we're all a part of his church doing this thing together. And so I'm going to invite the band up. And let me just, here's what we're going to do to close is I want to ask a question. We're going to sing a song and then I'm going to close us. But when you get this thing out and you pull out your calendars, how many times do we open our calendars and there's such angst there because of everything we have to do and all the, like everything coming up? How many times do we get that and we open our calendars and there's frustration there? So let me ask you this. What if the calendar could be more than that? What if it could be an order of hope and joy? What if the calendar could point us something to something bigger than ourselves, to the church, and something bigger than the church, to the hope of Jesus? And to eternal glory. Like, what if a simple calendar could do that? Like, would it be worth, like, experimenting with or trying out? I mean, it was for me, and again, that's what I've experienced. And so this song that we're going to sing is going to be a song that we sing week after week throughout Lent. Is that right? We're going to sing it every week. And again, it's going to hopefully bring us back to this moment where we get to, you know, just kind of think about where we are on the map, where we are with Jesus. And again, we get to celebrate the season that we are in. That's actually the first time I've heard that song. Sorry. Zan sent it to me like 3 weeks ago and said, hey, I think this should be our song for Lent. And it captures the season of Lent so well. And so that's where we're headed next week. We're going to explore what this season is. How might we celebrate it? How might it help form and shape us into a people who are ready to celebrate Easter? Let me just pray, and then we'll be. Father, thank you so much for not just rescuing us and then, you know, setting us free, but to forming and shaping us along the way. Thank you for molding us into a people who get to experience your hope day after day, week after week, year after year. And Lord, thank you for the wisdom of church fathers and guys like Chad and the collective wisdom of everybody in this room as we learn from one another and get to discern how to follow you well. I pray you would be with us this week in spirit, in joy, and in hope. And it's in Jesus' name. It's in your name, Lord, I pray.